Good morning, everyone. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720. Live Jams Friday coming up, straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies. And you big dummy, all coming up right here on a Friday morning. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You can send your text there as well, 312-981-7200. My next guest has been a friend of the show, boy, oh boy, for a long time now. Haven't had him on in a couple of years, actually. It's been a little while since we've had him on. Was a regular guest on the show at least once a month. He is a PR guy. He's been in public relations for years. He's an author, all-around good guy, and has a very interesting take on what's happening in the world, especially in pop culture and in the entertainment industry. His name is Richard Larmer. He's the CEO of RLM Public Relations, and you can check out rlmpr.com. That's his website. We have a link on our Facebook page. And we've had Richard on for many years, and we welcome Richard back. It's been a long time. Richard, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back. I mean, it has been a long, long time.
It's been a very long time. Let's talk a little bit about when did you first start on my show? I mean, it's
oh my God, it was like 95 or something.
it was a long time ago.
No, I don't remember what year it was, but it was. I'm looking backwards. I'm like, what year is this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to figure out what year it is. Well, listen, for those people who, you know, because this is a different time slot than I used to have. And so it's, you know, it might be a different audience who might not be familiar with you as one of our regular contributors. Tell everybody about yourself and RLM Public Relations.
Sure. So RLM is an entertainment and technology PR firm based in New York with an office in L.A., of course, because we have to follow those people too, and important, very important. Otherwise, we'll just be one coastal, and people won't respect us. And I've been around for a long, long time. I've written a whole mess of books about marketing and trends, and I guess the book I'm most known for is Punk Marketing, which has been out for 4 or 5 years. And we have a really good time, and we spend an awful lot of our free time in the office and outside of the office poking fun at everything going on in pop culture, because as I say, everything that you see is deliberate. So I like to point those things out to people and how the news gets made by, well, like people like me.
Now, let me ask you, Richard, how do you spot and then latch onto and know that it's a trend?
It's interesting. There's a huge difference between a trend and a fad. A fad is something that's not going to be very important in a few days, months, or maybe even a year. But a trend is something that portends what's going to really matter to us. A trend is something that takes us into like a new level of understanding or some kind of level where, you know, where suddenly it stays with us. It becomes immersive, and we don't sort of play around with trends. Good thing about trends is that they're not necessarily trendy per se. It's like, that's really where the whole like word and verb, rather adjective, diverge, because a trend really does, you know, like a person could be a trend because they'll change the way we see some form of art or some form of culture. I mean, like, for instance, like Bernie Sanders, and everybody thought he was a fad when he first came on the scene. But, you know, I think that for many years, even, you know, regardless of who you vote for, he's made a really big effect, not just in politics, but in the way that people see campaigning and the way that people see, you know, leadership. So that's really the difference. And a fad is like, you know, my favorite example of a fad is like a glass that has a chip on the bottom, and when you're in a pub, this actually appeared. You would fill up the glass, and then as it got closer to being empty, the chip would tell the bartender that you needed another drink.
Okay.
I mean, so that's not important, but it's a fad, and it lasted about 6 months, and everybody thought it was great, and we moved on from it.
Right. Well, let me, you know, it's very funny. Yesterday we were talking about fads on my show.
And
it's just funny that you mentioned that. Now let's talk a little bit about these fads. Why we started talking about fads from the past, and we started talking about, you know, we were talking about everything from Cabbage Patch Kids to Pogs to hula hoops to baggy pants. Well, baggy pants are still around. But it all got kicked off because of this Pokemon thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. oh, no is exactly my response to that, Richard. I don't get it. But that's definitely would fall under the category of fad.
Pokemon is the modern mood ring. You know, it's something that everybody's fascinated with and talking about. And in a year, we'll be like, "What was that?" Mm-hmm. You know, what, you know, and then. But listen, you know, if you put $20 million worth of advertising and marketing towards something, it's going to be big. There's no way around it. And you know, sometimes it amazes me when people say, "How did that happen?" And I want to show them the receipts, you know, from all the ads that were done. But yeah, fads are supported by usually a fad that gets the whole country excited. They're usually supported less by word of mouth and more by being hit over the head with an ad machine.
Right. And now, you know, and in this day and age, Richard, don't you think that fads become they become popular 50 times faster than they used to simply because of the technology?
Yeah, I mean, we're all like captive audiences now. So in the old days, they'd have to catch us with a billboard or a magazine or newspaper or TV or something. But now, since, you know, we've got these handy tools that we keep to our, you know, close to our hearts, you know, the smartphone and whatever, we're constantly staring at something that can tell us what's hot at that very moment. So if you spend enough money, you'll rise to the top of that cream, if you will, and suddenly everybody will be talking about it. It's so prevalent. I mean, that Go thing was killing me. It made me want to like turn off all my machines and go to bed for a few days.
Yeah, when it started, you know, a few days ago or last week, this Pokemon Go thing, because I don't know what it is. I didn't download it. I don't have no idea. And then suddenly on my news feed on Facebook, all over Twitter and everything, it's nothing but Pokemon. And I'm like, wait a minute. Did my news feed get taken over by a 12-year-old from 1998?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening?
It did, by the way.
Yes, it did. But yeah, it's just very strange.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Facebook is you know, thanks to the art of boosting, which is what happens when an ad keeps hitting you. If somebody wants to boost content or boost an ad and get it in front of more people, it's just an algorithm now. It's all math. It really has very little to do with you know, people's tastes. It more has to do with the things that you've clicked on in the past. And, you know, it's a very Facebook advertising is very sneaky that way. So, you know, based on how influential you might be, and that's based on the clicks of people that either like or comment on your stuff, you'll be one of those people that will get a lot of the trendy or fad oriented ads. They'll just pop up constantly.
Yeah.
And it's your fault, Nick.
Well, I know. I know it's my fault. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I use Facebook for involves my show, and my show is a pop culture related show.
Exactly.
So, of course, the kind of stuff that I'm going to get back in droves is stories about Pokemon or images of Pokemon being found in someone's bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. It's either going to be that or Mad Max Fury Road.
Which I don't mind, by the way. I don't mind.
I know that.
I'm at viewing number 43 of Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So basically, you can do it word for word now.
Yeah, well, there's only about 10 words in the movie.
That's right. Of course, it's not really about the language.
No, it's not. So, anyway, so we have to talk about a couple of things. Speaking of things that are happening this weekend, the new Ghostbusters movie opens. I have not seen it. I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Sure.
And we wanted to talk a little bit about the Ghostbusters buzz and the effect that it, you know, the internet had on the way this movie has been received, and about Melissa McCarthy in general. What are your take on this Ghostbusters thing?
Well, I really, you know, it's funny. I was a huge fan of Melissa McCarthy when she was on Gilmore Girls 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like she just keeps going down in pegs. She, you know, and it, in terms of her choice of vehicles, you know, she started with, you know, some amazing roles, and I think that she is now in a position where she's just signing every dotted line that's handed her. And the Ghostbusters movie, obviously they couldn't do a female comedy buddy movie without Melissa McCarthy, because she's, you know, she's the it girl in comedy. But I think that the buzz for this movie has been a lot less than it's been for many of the other blockbusters. And I wonder if it's just a lot of Ghostbusters fans from the past with their arms folded saying, you know, this is not the way they wanted to see the movie remade.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that, you know, Richard, a lot of that, the early buzz on it when they said they were going to make it and how they were going to make it, and it was going to be a female reboot and everything. And then suddenly it became about ignorant guys saying women should not be Ghostbusters. And
exactly.
that was the first wave of idiocy to hit the internet.
Right, but those guys are the ones that are going to be driving ticket sales. So it's going to be an interesting weekend. I mean, Finding Dory is still, like, the movie to watch.
No, well, actually, no, the Pets movie took it over. So,
oh, right, the Pets movie. I forgot.
Yeah, it's just a question of, at this point, Richard, it's just a question of what animated animal is going to be number one at the box office.
Yeah, really, which animated It's all about the anime. I tell you, once an animated animal became hot, it's the rinse-repeat theory of Hollywood. Really, yeah. So, but about Ghostbusters, what's interesting to me is that, I mean, I imagine the reviews will be, you know, mixed, based entirely on this, on, you know, what the director did with this. But, you know, unlike Star Wars, where you know, you knew precisely what you were going to be getting when you went to the box office. A lot of people have their arms folded. They revere those first movies. Like Mad Max, they've watched them 40 times and they know them by heart. I think that a lot of guys were being ignorant and kind of silly about it being an all-female cast. But you know what? It may end up surprising all of us. It may end up being one of those blockbusters that, you know, just bewildered audiences and made them, you know, word of mouth may end up being great for it.
It's interesting. We'll find out this weekend. But I got to say that the response that I've been getting from colleagues who have seen it, it's split right down the middle, Richard.
Yeah.
I know some people like it and some people hate it. And I still don't know what to make of it, neither of those opinions have swayed me in any direction.
Well, you know, I have to say that the marketing has been very odd because they just like a lot of reboots. Another overused word.
Yeah.
It's like optics. These words, they pop up and you can't stop hearing them.
Yeah.
So just like a lot of these remakes, this one seems to be trying to be all things to all people. And that's what the ads and that's what the whole trailer movement and the buzz and the discussion and even some of the interviews have made it very hard to understand what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And they've assumed very much that everybody already knows the story.
Right. Okay, Richard, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Got to take a quick break and we'll come back. My old friend Richard Larmer is here. He is your CEO from RLM Public Relations, a public relations expert. Always has a wonderful take on the world of entertainment and pop culture, and we love having him on. It's been a while since we've had him on, and it's great to have him back. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN and more with Richard after this. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Richard Larmer is joining me right now. You can check out rlmpr.com. We have a link on our Facebook page, too, if you'd like to see that. And we're talking all things pop culture and PR related. And welcome back, Richard.
I'm happy to be here.
All right. I want to, before we get off the Ghostbusters thing, we were talking about, how the buzz is kind of strange and people don't know what to expect. I took it as there was a huge flag. I was watching a Cub game the other night, and it was a national game, so it was on Fox. And when they went to a commercial break, they showed a Ghostbusters commercial. They showed a commercial for Ghostbusters. And I don't know, you're the PR expert, Richard. Tell me if I'm right on this interpretation. It seemed to me shocking and an act of desperation in a 30-second commercial to include Dan Aykroyd's cameo.
That was a total act of desperation. That does show that the studio is really nervous about, you know, kind of desecrating the monument, if you will, because I'm sure that cameo has absolutely nothing to do with the movie, and I'm sad to hear that doesn't bode well for the film, because they really should be showing the camaraderie between the women.
Yeah.
And that's really what that's how Ghostbusters work, or, you know, should. So, and it's interesting because those guys, the original stars, have really gone out to make a big deal out of this movie. I'm positive they're being paid to do that.
Sure.
You know, but, and they've done a pretty good job. Sometimes I wonder how sincere they are, or whether it's being scripted, in other words, their appearances on shows and things like that. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I kind of laughed when I saw Melissa McCarthy wearing glasses because I thought to myself, you know, she's still on script.
Yeah.
She's so busy she didn't have time to learn to learn her lines.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still, again, this is all going to be a mystery till I see it tomorrow. Sure. And then at the end of the weekend, we'll find out what the public makes of it.
Yep.
But this is, I think, probably one of the more interesting weeks during a summer of really underperforming and terrible films.
Well, you know, I think that Hollywood is finally going to learn its lesson about this idea that it has to be that they have to take an old idea and make it seem new. It really does, you know, even having the guy from Fast and Furious take over the Star Trek movie to turn it into a chase film.
Yeah.
You know, that things like that where, you know, it's like mix and match. And this has been happening for years now, and there's so little originality. I mean, we look at the top five box office movies, and they're all either retreads of something that's been tried before, or something that, you know, has a brand name. And, you know, we could laugh about the things that are being done, like the Trolls movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
Bill Maher put it really well last week. He said the next movie will star the air freshener that hangs on your car rearview mirror. What's next?
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. All right, you know, since the last time we spoke, and it's been a couple of years actually.
Yes, it has.
The streaming networks, the binge watching thing has taken off through the roof, and the way people consume their television through their devices and or through TV, you know, has changed the way people consume things in that world. And how do you feel about this trend? And how do you feel that the network is responding? The networks.
Well, yeah, I like Hulu and Netflix and all those guys, but I'm bewildered by what Amazon has done because they've turned themselves into a content like master, and all they're doing, I mean, now they're charging, you can now pay a monthly fee, you don't have to be a member of Prime, but the original idea was just to get everybody on Earth to become a Prime, Amazon Prime member, pay them $100 a year and get your 2-day shipping, but their original stuff has totally blown me away, and I think that the broadcast networks are responding by going further into the idiot market and pulling, you know, really, really awful, again, retreads or ideas that have been done 1,000 times. Like, Nick, do you know there are 2 TV shows on the networks this coming fall where the subplot, and I'm surprised they didn't see each other coming, on 2 different networks, the subplot is that the mother goes to work as an intern at the daughter's place of work.
2 separate shows with that plot?
2 separate shows have that subplot.
Wow.
And you'd think, you know, I mean, people who make TV shows are very cynical. So as far as they're concerned, they're making it in a bubble. But the fact is, you know, even this Tina Fey-produced show that's coming out this fall, it looks, you know, and I love Tina Fey. I'm a huge fan, but this looks really dumb. It just looks like the lowest common denominator, whereas, you know, you see Amazon doing, you know, Transparent and, you know, movie-like TV, you know, what you'd expect HBO or Showtime to do. And, you know, for me, Amazon has, because they're trying so hard to be a broadcast network, where Netflix, interestingly enough, has fewer pieces of content than it did 2 years ago. So I'm not sure what their business model is trying to be, whether they're, because they keep raising the prices and they have fewer movies and they have fewer TV shows. But Amazon just keeps, I mean, you know, I'm sure you've talked about this. I mean, Amazon has a TV show with Woody Allen coming out.
Yeah, I know.
With Miley Cyrus, no less.
Yeah.
Which I think is, Woody Allen's way of saying "screw you" to the TV industry.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
but it is interesting, and you know how the networks have responded to the streaming is that now TBS when they debuted Angie Tribeca, they did it as a binge. They did it in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I mean, I think that they obviously have TBS has been great. They've been making deals with, you know, all kinds of people, Steve Carell and Jason Jones and Samantha Bee and all these types, and they've done a really good job of sort of bringing out new comedy, and I think the Netflix binging thing, which is, you know, obviously how people see their programming now, is fascinating, and what really fascinates me is that younger generations are watching the TV shows that we saw, you know, before DVRs, you know, like when Seinfeld was hot, and now Seinfeld is hot again because of Hulu. And, you know, you've got these very young people watching Seinfeld for the first time, and all of these shows for the first time because they're being, you know, Hulu's paying a fortune to have the entire library of Seinfeld on. And I think that the fact that people will sit down and watch 10 episodes of Seinfeld does say, you know, that the appetite for classic and quality TV is so much bigger than anything new that these networks can you know, like, for instance, this fall there'll be a new MacGyver. Do we need a new MacGyver?
I know, and a show on Fox based on Lethal Weapon?
Lethal Weapon. That just sounds like a bomb even saying that.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, hang on. Hold on a second. There's Richard Larmer, everybody. We'll come back and we got the news here, and then after that, we'll come back and talk with Richard for a couple of more minutes here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're going to get to our regular features here. You Big Dummy coming up next, and Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, Fly Jams Friday all coming up. I wanted to talk a little bit more with my guest, Richard Larmer, old friend of the show. He is with RLM Public Relations. You can check out rlmpr.com. And we always have a lot of fun talking with Richard about entertainment, pop culture, and anything that's happening in the world. Richard, welcome back.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention, again, we were talking about Hulu and Amazon and Netflix before the break. And I did want to mention really quickly that I on Hulu, one of my favorite shows from last year just debuted its first two episodes. I love Difficult People.
I love Difficult People.
Oh, my God.
And I was not an Eichner fan beforehand because I thought Billy on the Street was like a one-second skit that was turned into a TV show. But he is perfect for that, and I love the fact they go further than anybody's ever gone in terms of you're the worst type behavior.
Yep.
And I think that they are finally saying the things that everybody, you know, like Larry David is always saying ridiculous things, but you really can't see yourself saying them, whereas in Difficult People, you can see yourself saying these horrible things to people.
Yep. I totally agree. I think that show is extraordinarily entertaining, and I think it's very funny. I am though. By the way, Richard, I am a big Eichner fan. I could watch him screaming at people with a microphone on the street all day long.
I miss that. I don't understand it. Like I follow him on Instagram. I follow very few people on Instagram. Not for any snobby reason. I'm just too lazy to get to it. But you know, I guess I really have to understand. You know, I'll take another look at it. I know that Hulu picked up all of his seasons now of Billy on the Street.
Mm-hmm.
So they're showing every one of them. So I'll take a look. I know he's had some great guests on, and I guess he does a lot of. But I did see him on the street once, screaming at people.
Oh,
and
did
I guess in person, it does take a little bit of getting used to.
I bet it does. All right, before we let you go, something you wanted to talk about was how newspapers are now writing about themselves more than anything else. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the newspaper business, you know, thanks to the election and thanks to everything that's been going on in the news lately, they've been spending so much time trying to, and magazines are doing this too, trying to keep themselves valid, trying to keep themselves relevant, that the newspapers have become like their own best promotion. They really want, daily newspapers online especially, really want those eyeballs. So they're doing basically anything they can to keep people thinking of them first as their news source because, you know, just like anything, you have a choice of, you know, millions of ways to get your content. And I find it fascinating, especially in the era where, you know, there is a lot to cover, that if you really take a look at what's going on in any particular newspaper, you'll notice that a heck of a lot of the stories that they're talking about are themselves, you know, their own promotions. And I've never seen anything like it. I think this kind of foretells doom for the papers, because I think that we're all getting a little tired of that kind of hype, you know, where people are looking inward and talking about themselves too much. And I think that any product that does that, that doesn't realize that they need more to tell the story that other people want to hear, they won't make it. So I feel like in a year we'll be talking, we'll be like, do you remember those newspapers they used to give us, you know, give us news? They're going to be fading, and that's one of the reasons why. And I don't think people have really caught on to just why they're turning away from newspapers in droves.
When did you think that started? When did you start to notice that?
I started to notice it just before the primaries. Where it seemed like people were gearing up, were revving up for a news cycle. And it was, you know, obviously when you watch CNN, they're always talking about, you know, CNN is the place, you know, you must be there. Everything is about us. So that's, you're used to that. But now newspapers and magazines are doing the same thing. They're saying, this is why you need us. You know, it's almost, you know, it seems like begging to me. And I wonder what, you know, what that says about the news business, period, whether or not, you know, obviously news is entertainment, and much more so than ever. But when you're on the New York Times, and a lot of their stories are about the way the New York Times covers their stories, you really have to start wondering, you know, how desperate is the New York Times for eyeballs?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of coverage, how do you feel about not just the newspapers, but the internet coverage, the television coverage of this insane election this year?
Well, I'm just happy I never have to. I don't have to say the word primary for the next 3 years, because it's over. I think that all the people that are covering that were really thrown for a loop by Donald Trump, and the fact that every time he opens his mouth, it makes news. I will guarantee you that anybody that runs for president in the next cycle will do exactly the same. We'll try and be as crazy and over the top as Trump, just to get ratings, just to get numbers. And I think that this is one of those situations where the media has held the microphone up to some of these candidates and let them say anything they want, and it's actually a little embarrassing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm astounded by how far Trump has gotten. I don't want to get into the politics of it.
Sure.
But just on the simplest of levels, that's part of the story, as you said, Richard.
Yeah.
Part of the story is just how far this guy has gotten.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's a reality TV star. I mean, everybody, you know, people forget that, you know, he was on for 11 seasons, and that's a long time on broadcast TV. You know, tens of millions of people feel like they know him. And I think that if one of the Real Housewives had run for president, they probably would have gone just as far.
You know, that's I think puts it all into perspective. I really do think that. That's interesting. It'll be really crazy to see what happens we got the conventions coming up. That's going to be
conventions are going to be nuts. They're going to be like they're going to be incredibly entertaining, and whoever speaks at the Republican convention, just watch how their lips move when they say what they say, because it's going to be a lot of people, you know, bewildered like the rest of us are, a lot of talking heads getting up there and saying things that they never thought they'd say.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty entertaining, and we got that to look forward to.
Yes,
Richard,
do.
It's great to have you back. We'll do this a lot more often, okay?
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad to be back.
Okay, thank you, Richard.
Take care.
Richard Larmer, he's such a great guy. Was on my show regularly for a very long time. We're going to get him back on now and make a habit out of it. He's just such an interesting and fun guy. CEO of RLM Public Relations. We have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com. Nick D. Show.